What if the two most successful, rigorously tested scientific theories in human history, the rules of gravity and the rules of the quantum realm, are both completely right, but we have just been looking at them from the wrong dimension?
Yeah, that is the exact premise we're tackling today.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We have a truly fascinating topic for you. We are going to be exploring a breathtaking theoretical physics manuscript titled Two Frameworks Version 10 Final.
It really is a remarkable document. I mean, it attempts the absolute holy grail of physics. It doesn't just try to, paste these two monumental theories together.
Right, definitely not a paste job.
Exactly. It argues that general relativity, which is Einstein's theory of gravity and quantum mechanics, the physics of the subatomic realm, are actually just two different readings of the exact same underlying geometry.
And it claims they are both generated from a single, surprisingly simple self-referential equation. Okay, let's unpack this because I want to point out right away to you listening that you do not need a PhD in theoretical physics to follow along with this.
No, absolutely not.
We are going to serve as your guides, translating all this dense math into some clear, incredibly mind-bending concepts.
We're really looking at the architecture of reality itself here.
Right, and to understand why this is so revolutionary, we need to look at the problem it's trying to solve. Usually, when we think about the universe, we assume it's like, well, a giant theater stage. The stage is the vacuum of space, the ticking clock on the wall is time, and all the stars, planets, and particles are just actors walking around on it.
It's a very comforting image, honestly. The background is perfectly fixed, and the actors do all the dynamic work.
But then you look at Einstein's general relativity, and that theory says, no, the stage itself is bending, warping, and stretching depending on how heavy the actors are.
The stage is completely alive.
Yeah. But on the other side, quantum mechanics completely demands a flat, fixed stage to do its incredibly weird probabilistic calculations.
Which is the core issue. Because if the stage is warping while quantum mechanics is trying to calculate the probability of where an electron is, the math entirely breaks down.
It's like trying to play a high-stakes, hyper-precise game of chess on a board that's actively melting.
That's a great way to put it. And physicists have spent a century trying to unify them.
Which brings us to the first major section of our source material, the one equation to rule them all. This entire universe-spanning framework starts with just one mathematical seed.
Just one.
It is the equation sigma equals 1 over 1 plus sigma. That's it. Every single coefficient in that equation is exactly the number one.
That simplicity is deceptive, though. Because it's a self-referential equation, it constantly feeds back into itself.
Like a loop.
Exactly like a loop. If you take that equation and clear the denominator to solve it, you get a quadratic equation. And the roots of that equation involve the golden ratio, which mathematicians denote with the Greek letter phi.
Okay, and this is where the manuscript says this mathematical seed sets off an unavoidable chain reaction of algebra.
It's a Hubble cascade.
The text says that because of the golden ratio, the discriminant of the equation is 5, and that forces a specific number field, which forces a five-fold icosahedral symmetry.
Which mathematically forces the existence of a four-dimensional geometric shape called the 600 cell.
But wait, I have to stop right there. How does an equation like force a physical shape to exist? That feels like saying my grandma's cake recipe mathematically forces an oven into existence.
That's a great question, and it's vital we understand the mechanism here, not just the outcome. In mathematics, algebra dictates what geometry is legally allowed to exist. Where the equation generates that discriminant to 5, it strictly limits the angles that can be used in a symmetrical shape. If you try to build a perfectly symmetrical 3D shape using those specific mathematical rules, you physically can only build an icosahedron.
Which is basically a 20-sided die.
Precisely. You have no other choice. Other shapes literally won't close perfectly.
Okay. So the math acts as a blueprint that only allows one specific building to be constructed.
Exactly. And if you take those exact same mathematical rules into four spatial dimensions, they strictly build a shape called the 600 cell. It's a hypershape with 120 vertices. And what's crucial to emphasize here is that no arbitrary choices are made. Unlike other physics theories that might, pull arbitrary shapes or extra dimensions out of a cupboard just to make their equations work.
Right, to force a fit.
Yeah. This single equation algebraically demands every subsequent structure.
It reminds me of a sourdough starter. You don't add a bunch of complex, highly engineered ingredients. You just take flour and water, the absolute simplest things, and you let it interact with itself.
Just letting it do its thing.
Yeah, and just by feeding on itself, it generates this massively complex, bubbling ecosystem of structure. But that brings up a massive question for you listening.
Well, sure.
If it all starts with just this tiny mathematical seed, how does a purely abstract four-dimensional shape actually become the physical universe you and I interact with every day?
Well, to answer that, we have to look at how this abstract 4D shape bridges over to established physics.
Mm-hmm.
This manuscript didn't actually invent the math connecting geometry to gravity and quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
No, that scaffolding has actually been sitting in the academic literature for decades.
And that leads us directly to the missing key. The manuscript highlights three major mathematical theorems that have just been waiting in the dark to be connected.
Sitting right there in plain sight.
Right. And if you're listening to this and wondering how a dry math proof from the 1980s affects your physical reality, stick with us, because this is where the pieces click together.
The first is Chentsov's theorem from 1982. Chentsov proved that if you have a space made entirely of probabilities, like a map of all the possible states a system could be in, there's only one unique mathematical way to measure distance across it.
Okay.
It's called the Sicherel metric.
Okay, so that's the rule for measuring distance in a map of probability. Then jump to 2001. Brody and Houston proved that the mathematical distance metric used in quantum mechanics, the way subatomic particles are measured, is exactly one quarter of that Fisher-Rao metric.
Correct. And finally, Jacobson in 1995. He proved that Einstein's complex equations of gravity don't need to be assumed as a fundamental law.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they actually naturally arise purely from the thermodynamics of local horizons. Meaning, if you have the right temperature and entropy relationships balancing out in a space, gravity just naturally emerges as a byproduct.
But wait a minute, I have to play skeptic for a second on behalf of the listener here. If Jacobson, Chentsov, and Brody Houston published this incredible mathematical scaffolding decades ago, why didn't the wider physics community put this together sooner?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the physics community was looking in a completely different direction. They were looking for new dimensions, new exotic subatomic particles, or entirely new mathematical concepts like string theory or non-commutative geometry.
They wanted a shiny new toy.
Basically, yeah. They were searching for new physics. What this manuscript argues is that the existing math was already perfect. These three theorems were beautiful, but they were inert.
Like empty buildings.
Empty structures, exactly. We didn't need new math. We just needed the right geometric content to feed into the existing equations.
And that content is our sourdough starter. The manuscript takes the 600 cell, that 4D shape generated by our simple equation, and extracts its eigenvalues.
Right.
Now, for you listening, eigenvalues is a heavy math term, but how should we think about them in this context?
Think of eigenvalues as the fundamental DNA, or the structural pillars of a mathematical object. They are the core, unchanging numerical properties that define how that shape behaves.
Perfect. So the 600 cell provides these nine specific structural pillars, and they act as the exact mathematical sample space that unlocks all three of those old theorems simultaneously.
All at once?
The seed provides the exact probability space Chentsov needs, the exact metric Brody Houston needs for quantum mechanics, and the exact thermodynamic balance Jacobson needs to generate gravity.
It activates the bridge. It provides the fuel for the engine that those earlier mathematicians built. And once that bridge is activated, we can walk across it and re-examine those confusing parts of our universe.
Okay, so if this shape perfectly maps probability, does that mean it explains why quantum mechanics relies on probability in the first place? I mean, for 100 years, experiments have shown that particles can be in two places at once. They can instantly affect each other across the galaxy.
And the mere act of measuring them literally changes their state.
Yes, all of that.
The famous quantum mysteries. Superposition, wave-particle duality, quantum entanglement, the things that make quantum physics feel like magic.
But the manuscript claims that these quantum mysteries aren't actually solved by this framework. They're dissolved.
Dissolved, yes.
They cease to be mysteries at all once you understand the geometry.
Because the state space,
yeah,
the fundamental absolute reality in this framework is that 600 cell. And that 600 cell lives in four spatial dimensions.
Right.
However, the observer, you, me, our scientific instruments, the Large Hadron Collider, we only inhabit three spatial dimensions.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think of it like making a shadow puppet on the wall. The hand itself, the 4D reality, is completely definite, solid, and real. It's not blurry or probabilistic. It is exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2D shadow it casts on the wall changes wildly depending on the angle of the light. We physicists have been staring at the 3D shadows of a 4D universe, thinking reality is inherently blurry and weird and probabilistic. But actually, we're just missing a dimension of perspective.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which is arguably the most famous rule in quantum mechanics.
Oh, definitely.
It states that you cannot measure a particle's exact position and its momentum at the same time. The more accurately you measure one, the more the other blurs into uncertainty.
Right, and we've always just accepted that as a magical fuzziness baked into the universe.
But in this framework, it's not magical fuzziness. It's purely a geometric phenomenon. Because we are projecting a four-dimensional reality into a three-dimensional observation, the order in which we measure matters.
Oh, because every time you project a 4D object onto a 3D wall, something has to be left behind. Information is physically destroyed at that projection boundary.
Exactly right.
So if you shine your light from the momentum angle to measure that, you get a sharp shadow, but you completely destroy the position data. It's not that the particle is magically blurry, it's that your 3D wall can't hold all the information at once.
Exactly. It fundamentally respects what physicists call contextuality by construction. It's a massive shift in critical thinking. Rather than assuming the universe requires a mystical collapse of a wave function when a human looks at it, we simply recognize the limitations of our observer viewpoint.
That makes so much sense.
Right. Superposition, the idea of a particle being in two states at once, is actually just a single, definite 4D point whose fourth coordinate is currently inaccessible to our 3D eyes.
Mind-blowing.
And entanglement is just two things sharing a structure in that higher dimension. From the perspective of the fourth dimension, there is no spooky action at a distance. It's all just connected.
Okay, so if this 4D geometry perfectly explains the blurry subatomic quantum realm, what about the big stuff? How does it explain time and gravity?
Well, this requires us to look at how the framework handles the concept of background space-time.
Mm-hmm.
As we discussed in the beginning, quantum mechanics assumes space-time is a fixed stage. But this framework is background independent.
Meaning the stage isn't there until the math creates it. The universe doesn't happen in space-time, it generates space-time.
Precisely. The three spatial dimensions we move around in naturally emerge from the geometric progression of the icosahedron in the 600 cell. But the single temporal dimension time itself doesn't come from the physical shape.
And then where does it come from?
Time comes from the contraction rate of the mathematical map.
Right, because remember, our original seed equation feeds into itself over and over. It's a dynamical map. And the roots of that equation are mathematically asymmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
If you run the equation forward, it's perfectly stable and contracts toward a fixed point. But if you try to run the equation backward, it expands exponentially and completely destabilizes.
And that algebraic asymmetry is the physical arrow of time. Time only moves forward for us because the underlying mathematics cannot run backward without catastrophic instability. The arrow of time isn't a mystical force, it's purely algebraic.
That is wild. And it leads to one of my absolute favorite parts of the manuscript, the derivation of entropy. In physics, there is this incredibly famous formula for the entropy or the disorder of a black hole. It's called the Bekenstein-Hawking formula.
Named after Stephen Hawking and Jacob Bekenstein.
Right. And it states that entropy equals the area divided by 4.
Yes. The famous factor of 1/4. For decades, physics has traditionally had to just insert that 1/4 into the equations by hand to make the math work with the known laws of thermodynamics.
But this framework doesn't insert it by hand. It derives it natively from the geometry.
Just from the shape itself.
Yeah, because the fundamental reality is a four-dimensional shape, and we are projecting it down to a three-dimensional observation. Exactly 1 out of the 4 coordinates is always hidden from us. That hidden fraction 1 out of 4, or 25%, literally, is the entropy. It's the inaccessible information hidden by the projection boundary.
And this connects beautifully back to the Jacobson theorem we mentioned earlier. Jacobson proved that if you have the exact right relationship between entropy and heat, Einstein's equations of gravity just appear.
Oh, wow.
Because this geometric framework perfectly derives that 1/4 entropy factor, it automatically satisfies Jacobson's requirements.
So what does this all mean for us? Are we just experiencing time as the physical feeling of information dissipating in this mathematical map?
This raises an important question about how we perceive reality.
Yeah.
Yes, in this framework, the local rate of information dissipation fundamentally sets the local tick rate of the clock.
That is just incredible to think about.
This thermodynamic balance, the dissipation of information matching the temperature of the system, forces Einstein's equations of gravity to emerge. Gravity isn't a separate invisible pulling force. It's the thermodynamic consequence of that 4D information projecting into our 3D world.
Math and philosophy are amazing, but physics is a brutal science. A physical theory must match real-world measurements, or it gets thrown out immediately. Does this mathematical bridge actually carry real traffic?
It does, and it does so with startling precision. Let's look at the fine structure constant.
For you listening, the fine structure constant is one of the most important numbers in the universe. It dictates the strength of the electromagnetic interaction, essentially how strongly light and matter interact. In nature, experimental physicists have measured it to be about 1 divided by 137.036.
And the manuscript derives this exact value entirely from the geometry of our seed equation. By calculating the rotational closure, specifically using the golden angle derived from our golden ratio seed, the framework gets a value of roughly 137.036.
That's crazy.
It matches experimental data to within 1.65 standard deviations.
And that is with zero free parameters. That means there are no arbitrary knobs being turned behind the scenes to make it fit. It just pops out of the geometry.
Just totally inherent to the math.
It also accurately predicts the masses of 51 different atomic nuclei with an error rate of just 0.064% and perfectly derives 6 distinct properties of the proton. And I have to push back here.
Please do.
Couldn't someone argue this is just advanced numerology, like just playing with fractions and golden ratios and exponents on a whiteboard until you finally get a number that kind of looks like the real world?
It's a very common critique of purely mathematical models, and it's a vital one to ask. But the manuscript provides a specific ablation study to counter that exact argument.
An ablation study.
Yeah, an ablation study is where you deliberately break parts of a model to see if it still somehow works. This was just numerology. You could tweak the underlying numbers slightly and get a roughly similar result.
And you can't.
Not at all. If you change the underlying mathematical seed from the golden ratio to the silver ratio, the error rate for predicting reality jumps to a catastrophic 55%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you change a single exponent in the gravity calculation from an 18 to a 17, the resulting value is off by a factor of 137. The framework is incredibly structurally rigid. Every single alternative is catastrophically wrong.
It's tightly wound. You pull one single mathematical thread and the whole universe unravels. But even with that extreme rigidity, a theory needs to make a prediction that can be tested in a lab and potentially proven wrong. It needs to be falsifiable.
And the manuscript offers a very clear falsifiable test regarding that fine structure constant. Currently, standard quantum electrodynamics, or QED, says that this constant runs, meaning its value changes at higher energy levels.
Right.
When you smash particles together really hard, which physicists call high momentum transfer, standard theory says the value should shift to around 128.
But this 600-cell framework predicts something completely different. It predicts that if you measure bound states, meaning particles that are locked together into a system, even at that high momentum transfer, it won't be 128.
Nope.
It will return the exact geometric ground state value of 137.036. It completely defies standard QED expectations. And the author openly states, if this experimental test fails, the geometric interpretation is falsified. Period.
It's a bold claim, and it puts the entire framework on the line for future experimental physicists to test.
The scope of this manuscript is just incredible. But before we wrap up, there is one final mind bender from the text that I think completely reframes how we look at the cosmos. It's about the cosmological constant, the energy of empty space itself.
The vacuum energy. This has historically been considered one of the most embarrassing failures in modern physics.
Right, because when quantum mechanics tries to calculate the total energy of the vacuum, the number it gets is 10 to the power of 120 times larger than what general relativity and astronomers actually observe in the real sky. That is a mismatch of 120 zeros. For decades, people thought the universe was absurdly, precariously fine-tuned.
But this framework argues it's not a fine-tuning problem at all. It's a category error.
A category error. Because quantum mechanics is measuring the individual fluctuating modes inside the space-time manifold, but the cosmological constant in general relativity is measuring the curvature of the manifold itself.
They're two completely different things.
The manuscript uses a brilliant analogy to explain this. It's like comparing the kinetic temperature of the moving air molecules inside a building to the physical temperature of the concrete foundation, and then wondering why they aren't the exact same number. You are measuring two fundamentally different things.
Exactly. When you calculate the cosmological constant by reading the geometry from the correct perspective, from the outside, measuring the manifold itself rather than the contents inside it, the framework predicts the exact observed value. No 120 zeros of magical fine-tuning required.
It's just so elegant. Now, we must impartially note that this framework isn't a finished, universally accepted truth yet. There is still work to be done.
Far from it. There are significant open mathematical challenges. For one, the explicit continuum limit remains to be fully constructed.
To put that in perspective for you listening, that means mathematically proving exactly how you move from a rigid discrete shape with 120 corners into the smooth, continuous quantum fields we observe in reality. It's kind of like having to prove how zooming out on a chunky, pixelated video game eventually makes it look like a perfectly smooth, high-resolution photograph.
Exactly. And the explicit commutator, algebra, the specific rulebook for exactly how operations and measurements must be ordered in quantum mechanics, also needs to be rigorously finalized within this geometry.
But the architecture is there. General relativity and quantum mechanics. Oh, sorry. Two different three-dimensional shadows cast by the exact same four-dimensional geometric object.
It challenges us to rethink everything we thought we knew about the fabric of reality.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over. If the two greatest, most rigorously tested scientific theories in human history were actually just describing the exact same 4D reality, and our universe's apparent complexity, its paradoxes, and all its quantum weirdness are just byproducts of observing it from a limited 3D perspective, what else in your daily life, your assumptions, or your personal reality are you completely misinterpreting simply because you are missing a dimension of perspective?
It definitely makes you wonder what else we're looking at that's just a shadow on the wall.
Just a shadow cast on a melting chessboard. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep questioning the background.